WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The incredibly popular new exhibition at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Alice Neal, People Come First, is the first retrospective of the beloved painter's work in New York in two decades. The show is a testament to humanism, humor, and radical politics of Neal's work. And in a career spanning nearly 70 years, her dedication to portraiture, a word she didn't love, we'll learn why in a bit, revealed an unwavering belief in social justice and an appreciation of the diversity that flourished in the city. So when I went to see the show over the weekend, I overheard something really great. A security guard told a couple people this. He was very enthused about the show, and he said, hey, if you go on YouTube, you can see Alice Neal on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and Johnny Carson just loved her. So, of course, went home, went to YouTube, looked at the 9-minute interview. It is delightful. So we're going to play a little bit of it. The audio's not great. I'm going to say that, but it is worth it. Here is Alice Neal on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson later in her life, talking about her commitment to figurative painting.
The human race at this point are slightly spoiled. Technology upsets them. So there's an awful lot of abstractionists that wouldn't do a figure, you know.
Right.
But as for me, I felt that the best record of life and everything else was figures. So I went against the grain.
That's interesting.
And you get punished for that.
Yeah.
But finally, you get them down.
It's a great interview. I suggest you go watch it. As critic Hilton Alls writes in The New Yorker, Neal's genius was to make us understand not just her interest in her subjects, but why we are interested in one another. Her paintings of neighbors in Spanish Harlem, where she lived for more than 20 years, as well as members of the Greenwich Village art scene, activists throughout the 20th century, and important individuals in her own life, are organized around some key themes that molded her life and her work. Alice Neal, People Come First, features more than 100 paintings, drawings, and watercolors, and was curated by Kelly Baum, Cynthia Hazen-Polsky, and Leon Polsky, Curator of Contemporary Art. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
And Randall Griffey, Curator in the Department of Modern and Contemporary Art. Randall, thanks for being with us.
Of course. Thanks for the invitation.
So, Kelly, Alice Neal was incredibly prolific. They're the themes that emerged from the show: New York City, home, counter/culture, the human comedy, motherhood, artist history, the nude, and good abstract qualities. As you begin to organize and assemble and think about the flow of the show, because it is huge, what was it you wanted visitors to understand about Alice Neal?
Well, we wanted visitors to understand the depth of her commitment to human beings, the depth of her humanism. And this expressed itself in her dedication to painting figures, really from the beginning to the end of her career. And we also wanted to emphasize just what a radical painter she was. She was always swimming against the tide, not just the artistic tide, but she rebelled against conventions and expectations of all kind. And she was, as you said in your introduction, really committed to social justice, equality, and democracy her entire life.
Randy, why did you all decide on taking sort of a conceptual approach around themes rather than a linear one?
I think Kelly and I have blended really a chronological approach and a thematic approach. Within those thematic sections, there is more or less a chronology. So as Kelly has said rightly on multiple occasions, you get sort of eight mini retrospectives within the one large retrospective. We wanted to approach her output with themes to really highlight how long her engagement with certain themes, such as motherhood, really were. She started painting mothers and children in Havana, Cuba, in the 20s, in fact, and then followed that through to nearly the very end of her career. So I think that this approach, this kind of blend of thematic and chronological, really helps to emphasize the aggregate effect of her art practice.
Kelly, the title of the show comes from something that Neil said in 1950. For me, people come first. I have tried to assert the dignity and eternal importance of the human being. There's so many works in the show, but I'm curious if there's one that you could share with our audience that you think really gets at this belief system of hers and how she accomplishes it through the choices she makes.
Well, I'm going to choose, and Randy won't be surprised at all, but the painting that opens the exhibition, Margaret Evans Pregnant from 1978. And as I often say on my tours, Neil often painted things that she wasn't supposed to paint, things she wasn't expected to paint in ways that she wasn't supposed to or expected to. And this applies especially to mothers and even more so to pregnant nudes. There was very little tolerance in the history of art, Western art at least, popular culture, mass media for images of pregnancy. And the honesty and candor that she brought to bear on her depictions of the pregnant body are extraordinary. She lavishes attention using paint and her paintbrush on all those aspects of the pregnant body that were deemed unseemly, that were considered kind of strange. And she did that because she believed in the fact of pregnancy. She felt it was something worthy of being represented and important to represent.
Yeah, and some of the paintings of pregnant women, you can see the sort of the engorged breasts and the veins on the breasts. Yeah, and she painted a lot of women in their later stages of pregnancy. I just thought it was such an interesting, you know, the idea that she really gets to the all of what it really is, right?
Absolutely. Physical, emotional, and psychological.
Randy, Neil called her works pictures of people, not portraits. I think that's the quote. What was it about the word portrait which she didn't care for? What was the difference to her between a portrait and a picture of a person?
Yeah, she was quite adamant about the distinction. She did not want her works described as portraiture for a range of reasons. She thought portraiture was a kind of bourgeois, staid and conservative convention. She associated it with kind of wooden likenesses of university presidents on college campuses, university campuses, or halls. And she felt that her work went well beyond a kind of wooden likeness of her sitter. She thought that her work went beyond likeness to suggest character and states of being. So for that reason alone, she said she was not a portrait painter. She also conceived of her work as a form of history painting that unfolded over time. She liked to think, and she certainly was, as she was working and painting, capturing a zeitgeist of the moment. And I think that's also one key aspect of her practice as a painter that comes out in the show, is her capturing a cultural zeitgeist, specifically a New York zeitgeist, over the course of the 20th century.
My guests are Kelly Baum and Randall Griffey, co-curators of Alice Neal, People Come First at the Met through August 1st. We get to learn about her as well, her life, Kelly, in the show. She got her start at the Philadelphia School of Design for Women, specifically. How did her education shape her and her art?
Well, I think that, as in many things, Neal rebelled against her education. And she was trained to produce, at best, academic pictures, conventional, safe. And she was, you know, trained not to be a professional artist, but to be a kind of Sunday painter, was considered a hobby. And she, that was not the life she wanted for herself. She didn't want to be a Sunday painter, and she didn't want to be a traditional painter. So she really took a lot of what she learned at, in college and turned it on its head, although she, I think, did, you know, remember lessons that that Robert Henry, who had taught at the school decades before her, she did absorb important lessons from that predecessor at the school. And even maybe more formative moment was when she traveled to Cuba with her husband, Carlos Enrique, which is where she was exposed to avant-garde art and leftist politics for the first time. And that, I think, set her on the path that she would pursue in earnest in Greenwich Village in the early 30s.
Randy, she was married once. She had many romantic entanglements during her life. We learned that, and some people may know this already, that one of her lovers destroyed a huge amount of her work. She was an ambitious woman at a time when that wasn't necessarily something that women were supposed to be in arts and politics. What were some of the obstacles and barriers she had to overcome to do her work?
Well, many, many, many obstacles. And Neal was a survivor. So it's really ultimately a story of overcoming these obstacles. First of all, of course, she was a woman. In trying to enter into a profession that was heavily dominated by men, not only as practicing artists, but also as critics and museum curators, museum staff, et cetera. So just fundamentally out of the gate, she had an obstacle of pursuing a career that historically and culturally was framed in terms of gender. And I do think that, that's, I think, the primary mm-hmm. obstacle. The other obstacle that emerged over time is, we talked a bit earlier about her commitment to the figure, but once figurative art, figurative painting fell out of fashion in the mid to late 40s and throughout the entire 1950s, there's a great obstacle there because there was such a bias against figurative art in the heyday of abstract expressionism that she starts to seem a little anachronistic. But the tide, luckily, changed. Her fortunes started to change in the 1960s as figurative art sort of reemerged with a new generation of artists.
Kelly, in the section titled Home, we see some of Alice Neal's paintings of her children. One is Hartley on the rocking horse. Another is the portrait of Isabetta. She worked out of her home at times.
Mm-hmm.
What impact did that have on her work?
Well, she always worked at home. She never had a separate studio, and so her home was always the stage, the setting for her paintings. And I think because she consistently painted in whatever apartment or house or cabin she happened to be living in, that place, that site becomes a subject, almost a protagonist in the drawings and paintings themselves. That and what you're describing is actually one of my favorite parts of the exhibition. She begins to depict all the activities that take place in the home, in the private sphere. And this includes lovemaking, childcare. She begins to paint the objects in the home that are at her fingertips, pieces of fruit, bottles, decorative objects. And the home was really, truly important. She was never able to afford a separate studio. She also raised two sons on her own as a single mother with very little support from those sons' fathers. And so she really was stuck in the home. That was where she had to work, where she did double duty as an artist and a mother.
And Kelly, some of the nudes of the children were controversial because they showed genitals. How did she think about painting nudes of children?
Well, you know, and Randy should weigh in here. Mm-hmm. The painting of Isabetta, which she's painted, so far as we know, two nudes of children, one of an infant seen from the point of view, actually her grandson, Andrew, seen from the point of view of a caregiver, someone changing a diaper maybe. And she also painted her daughter, Isabetta, with whom she would become estranged. And she knew that she couldn't exhibit that painting when it was made. It remained at home in the closet for a long time. And it does raise very tricky issues that need to be confronted, issues around bodily autonomy, exposure, vulnerability. And yet that painting for Neil was a kind of talisman, almost a surrogate for a daughter that she would lose. That painting was one that was destroyed by Kenneth Doolittle. She had to remake it the next year. She returned to it again late in life. And that daughter, whose pose is defiant and rather audacious, that picture is one that she clung to for much of her life.
The show is Alice Neal, People Come First. It's at the Met through August 1st. My guests are co-curators Kelly Baum and Randall Griffey. So, Randy, there's a small section of the show, this enormous show, that has Neal's paintings besides art of like Van Gogh and Jacob Lawrence. And it's this idea of history. And there's a wall of mother and child portraits. One's America Sout from 1899, a Van Gogh from 1888, and then one of Neal's mother and child. What went into the idea of placing these three paintings next to each other? What can we gather from these in conversation?
Well, the Met loves to take opportunities, especially opportunities in the context of modern contemporary art, to bring the historic collections, the great historic collections of the Met, to bear on modern contemporary art. This is something we did a few times over in the Met Broyer exhibitions. You might remember that Kerry James Marshall curated himself a selection of works from the Met's collection that meant something to him. So there's a precedent for this. And I think we were especially compelled to do this with Neal because she's often thought up to be a bit art historically anomalous, a little bit without context, that she was so much her own artist, her own being with a paintbrush, that her work was never really deeply in dialogue with the work of others, either historic artists or her contemporaries. So I think this is one of the many, stereotypes around Neal that we really wanted to undo in the show. And what you mentioned, the trio of Cassatt, Van Gogh, and Neal is one of my favorite moments, in fact. And we're not being didactic in the situation. You may have noticed that there were no chat labels, no explanation with regard to individual pictures, but let the viewers and visitors kind of contemplate and come to some of their own conclusions about the dialogues going on between these great works of art.
Randall, Kelly told us what was one of her favorite paintings in the show. What's yours?
Well, I will admit up front that it's very difficult to choose, as you would expect, because I've learned myself so much about Neal in the process of being fortunate to work on this project for the last two plus years. And I've come to love Neal every step of the way. I love her in the context of the Works Progress Administration. The Spanish Harlem period is full of great works of art. But for me, I would love to, I shouldn't say hold on to, my colleagues at Cleveland wouldn't like me to say this, but Jackie Curtis and Rita Red, which is in the collection of the Cleveland Museum, is really such a standout for me. I think partly because I wrote about this work in the context of Neal's queer sitters for the catalog. And so for me, this is one of those zeitgeist paintings. This is the 70s in New York. This is the 70s in the Lower East Side. It wasn't obviously painted in the Lower East Side, but Jackie Curtis and Rita Red were such, especially Jackie, was such a kind of a cult figure in the Lower East Side underground or counterculture that for me, this is one of those moments where Neal really captures the zeitgeist. It's just an arresting work.
Kelly, Alice Neal also painted New York City, her home city, and she lived in all these different neighborhoods across New York, Greenwich Village, Spanish Harlem, the Bronx. I mean, there is one painting that is, if you stand underneath the High Line right now, it looks almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. How does the view of the city we see in her paintings shift as she moves through life?
That's a very good question. You know, she is on the street in more of her early paintings. So the paintings of Greenwich Village and the street scenes that she made in Spanish Harlem, and actually some of the ones that she painted on the upper West Side, you know, the point of view is that of somebody who is embedded on the street, you know, standing on the sidewalk, standing at the entrance to Central Park. And so her point of view on the city is literally that of somebody embedded, you know, who's living it from the ground up. But then as she grows older, she begins to paint more and more images from her window. And again, this is the apartment on the upper West Side, 300 107th, I think. And maybe she's older, and so getting out and about perhaps is harder, but she becomes enamored of the facades that you see, that she would see outside of her window, enamored of the scenes that she saw on the ground. And those are some of her most abstract paintings. And I think that she comes to appreciate late in life the possibilities of abstraction that the city presents to her. Early on, it's really about the people. It's about the buzzing activity of the street. But later, she is interested in the architecture, the structure of the city.
Before I let you both go, I want to ask you about people, because as I mentioned, this has become a hugely popular show. People are waiting in line for an hour to get through this show. And it's been funny. One of the security guards said to me, he said, "Don't give us too good a review. It's been kind of crazy in here." He was kidding, obviously. But I'm curious, Randall, did you anticipate this?
Yes and no. I thought Neil would be a hit. I didn't anticipate the additional kind of layers of meaning the project would accrue because of this past year that we've been through together. And I think one of the reasons it's resonating so deeply is that Neil acknowledges suffering, the human condition of suffering, but also that suffering is always accompanied by a sense of endurance. So there's a great resonance, I think, and also, frankly, you know, her images of New York from the 30s resonate so deeply and around what the city was looking like a year ago, in fact, and also her politically engaged work, especially Free Willie McGee, looks a lot like protests that erupted after George Floyd's murder a little over a year ago. So it just hits you on multiple fronts. And I'll just say, too, as a more of a nuanced detail, Jeff and Brian, who are it's the couple that is on the facade and signage, just the very fact that they're touching is, I think, resonant in a way after a year of social distancing that that image wouldn't resonate in the same way without. So just in multiple ways, I think. We couldn't be happier. We're glad that people are having this kind of meaningful, deep experience, a kind of catharsis with Neil. It's appropriate.
Alice Neil, People Come First, is now on view at the Met. Thanks to Kelly Baum and Randall Griffey for being with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you very
much.
Thank
you.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.